Factis Radio, FM 104.6, the heart of the island's community.
For the next hour, I'm out and about on the Wight with Visit Isle of Wight. I've come to Kingston Small Holding, which is near Shurrell. I'll be meeting Simone Dickens and David Yates. This inspirational couple have 6 acres and they have been managing and maintaining their small holding for the past couple of years. The landscape is absolutely stunning. It's rolling hills, lush, verdant greenery. I can see around me a polytunnel, which is full to the brim with exotic plants. There are a couple of goats who are checking me out currently. Simone and David live in a gorgeous little farmhouse overlooking their wild flower meadow, and they've installed a pond to help the ecology. It's a truly idyllic part of the island, and David and Simone have been kind enough to offer me a guided tour to tell me some top tips. They're going to show me what they grow, what animals they raise, how they've managed the land, and what they hope for from the future for this tiny slice of paradise on the Isle of Wight.
Well, we moved from a tiny flat in Ventnor, and we had lovely sea views, but out here we've got views of a totally different kind. We can stand in the middle of our field, a 6-acre field, spin round, and we struggle to count 10 houses in any direction as far as I can see. Simone had kept goats previously, so we sort of started off an idea of turning it into a bit of a place for goats. I won't use the word farm yet, but that's what it's become. It's become a goat farm. We've now got 32 goats.
Oh my gosh, but, 32 goats. And Simone, you're the secretary for the Isle of Wight Goat Club,
yeah,
aren't you?
Yeah,
and
that's right.
So what do you guys do? I mean, you meet?
Yeah, we meet up every sort of 2-3 times a year, maybe. We have an AGM, and we do lots of sort of emailing, and we do newsletters, and we're sort of a point of contact for people. If they're interested in getting goats, they ring up the Isle of Wight Goat Club and then try and put them in touch with people who may have kids, or, you know, try and help them, and we help with medication and that sort of thing.
On our magical tour of your small holding, where should we go next?
Well, we're currently stood on our lawn, which is classed as domestic land, so normal domestic planning rules, etc. And then we're going to take just a few strides, going to go through a gate, and we're then into our field, and it's agricultural land, so different rules apply. And the first thing we're going to see is our orchard. This part of the island is quite windy, very windy, in fact, when there's storms. So we've wanted a bit of protection for the house and the garden, so we've planted quite a few fruit trees and also lots of willow. And the goats that we're going to see in a minute, they love goat willow. And we're very lucky around here. We've got the shepherd's trail just across the field at the back there. And alongside the trail, there's lots of goat willow growing. So we've been along and taken lots of what they call whips, which is a piece of willow, stuck them in the ground. And 2, 3, 4 years later, they're now developing into nice bushes, which will become trees. And that's going to provide the screen. We're looking for a bit of protection. Over to our left here, we've got some sheep, and about an hour ago they were all sounding like some Scottish pipe band.
They're hungry.
But they've all been fed now, so they're all settled down in a corner of the field. But out there we've got 15 sheep and lambs. Basically, they are lawn mowers. That's their primary aim. They're here to mow the lawns,
yeah,
mow the grass, keep the paddocks under control, and we rotate them round, and that's what they do.
I must say, this is a very zen area, isn't it? So we've got the mist rolling in over the hillside. We've got various sheep with their little lambikins just snoozing next to them. But as you were saying, an hour ago, it was absolute carnage because everyone was very hungry and needed feeding. Do you find that, you know, feeding times, it's just nuts?
It's feed the husband, then feed the animals. No, we're trying to do it the other way around. But it's like, it comes in hungry, happy. Yeah, so we've got a really strict feeding regime in the evening, and everybody has certain amounts of food, and everybody's fed in a certain way, and everybody knows who's next and which order they go in, and we're always here at the right time, aren't we? But it's mayhem.
Now, how many chickens have you got here?
About 50. There's 3 cockerels and about 47 hens. One of the hens this morning went broody, so just put some food in the hutch and some water, and then in 21 days time hopefully we will have a few chicks.
Do your chickens have names? Or I suppose you may have too many to name them all.
We have done sometimes. We've had the odd cockerel, Lucky we had, and Son of Boy Boy. And we've had a a few cockerel named, but no, the hens are just generally hens.
What do you do with your hens?
Well, I have a saying, those that are laying are staying, and those that are not are heading for the pot.
Well, that is life on a smallholding, isn't it? You know, that's the natural cycle. And these chaps and ladies, well, they're in exceptional health, yeah, and they have a wonderful life. Yeah.
So they're classed as caged yard birds. So they're not free range. We have had them free range. But to be honest, as you'll see in a little while, we've got plants and a nursery everywhere. And what they did in the past when they were free range, they trashed everything. So now they're in this great big cage you can see. And also, as you can see inside, it's also got loads and loads of garden waste in there. So it's also a garden recycling centre.
Oh, fantastic.
And not just for our own garden. We get visiting gardeners come along. They leave stuff at the entrance here in builder's bags. And every morning I drag it in there. And in 6 months' time, we dig it out and it goes onto the nursery.
Tell us about your mogs.
They're farmyard cats, really. I mean, they were feral and we got them in two pairs. And because I was a fan of gangsters in the 60s. They're called the Krays. We don't see them very often, but we don't see many rats and mice either.
Join us after the break, where our tour of the Kingston smallholding continues. We meet the mighty Hercules, a bunch of wieners, and check out the succulents in the polytunnel. You're listening to Vectis 104.6 FM and online. Join me out and about on the Wight with Visit Isle of Wight, where we explore the island's hidden treasures and inspiring islanders. This week, we're at the Kingston smallholding with Dave and Simone.
We've now come to the other side of the orchard. And we're trying in this area to let the grass grow a bit and encourage wildflowers. And we actively sow wildflowers. We also had a couple of ponds put in, and that's also good for the wildlife. We've noticed lots of newts and frogs around, and some fish came in with some weed, which surprised us. And lots of sort of pond plants are in there too. So this is all going to help with the ecology of the site. And this is right next door to the pig compound, sty or paddock or whatever else people like to call it.
Fantastic. Let's go see the pigs. I absolutely love piggies. I think they're my favourite animal just because they're just adorable, aren't they? And we've got 5 have just come straight up to the fence to say hello to us. They've obviously been fed, so they're just doing the usual piggy thing, aren't they?
Yep. They were fed earlier. They get fed twice a day. These pigs are about 9 weeks old. We get them in as what they call weaners at about 6-7 weeks old. And they go off somewhere at about 18 weeks. And we started off with 2 weaners to finish. And then we went up to 3, 4. And then last year we tried 6.
Yeah.
And because everything seems to be going okay, this time we've got 10. And the other expansion we're going to try this year is a bit of an overlap. So before these go, there's going to be another 10 or so arrive in the next paddock.
What breed are these?
Right, well, the ones we had to start with were lovely pigs. They were rare breed pigs, various types. But when they actually went to the slaughter and the butchers got hold of them, they said although the customers loved the flavour, they had quite a high fat content. And that really explains why these sort of rare breeds have become rare, because of the high fat content.
Yeah.
The ones in front of us now, these are a cross between a large white and what I believe is called a Duroc. They're not bred here, they're bred at a friend's farm, and then we just, as I say, take them at, as weaners, and then we finish them off.
Yes.
So hopefully these will have a far less fat content, but they will still taste nice.
And they'll also be having a wonderful time before they go to the abattoir. You know, they've got a lovely big field, they've got things to play with, lots of mud to wallow in. You know, it's a perfect setting, isn't it, for if you want to eat food with good roots, you know where it's come from.
Yeah, I mean, I've walked through a place on the South Downs I called it Pig City, and thousands and thousands of pigs up there, and they didn't have a blade of grass. And it was just all hard stony ground, and it looked pretty uncomfortable for them up there. Whereas these, as you can see, they're all snouts into the mud. It just amazes me every time I see it, because I think, how the hell can you dig a hole with your nose? But they do. And
and they still look adorable, with
they
it?
They still look adorable.
They were lovely and clean a few weeks ago.
Oh, they were when they arrived. And the I can't call it grass, the weeds in this paddock, as you can see in front of you, they're about 4 foot high in places. And the whole thing was just a mass of those. And already, in this tiny corner, they've sort of got rid of those. By the time they leave, this will be looking like a scene out of a First World War battlefield. yeah. So, and they're great fun as well. And of all the animals we have to say they are the least trouble.
Really?
Now we've stopped them escaping.
We're now off to see an animal renowned for its escapology skills, the goat. So, Simone, tell me about the breed of goats that you have here.
So these are British Guernsey and Golden Guernsey. The Golden Guernsey is a rare breed, but the British Guernsey is it's a breed of goat that's been mixed with a Saanen or a larger white goat to produce more milk.
These guys and girls in front of us here with their golden coats, are they for meat?
No, they're dairy goats. They're literally just to produce kids and to produce milk. And what we do is we breed them every other year, so they have a year off.
Do your goats have names?
Yes, they've all got names. This lot have all got names, yeah. So from the top, the oldest one is Coral. She's 12. She produces milk still, but she hasn't kidded for years, has she? No. If you keep milking them, they'll keep producing milk. I've dried her off a few times, but she keeps she likes to be milked, so. And then I've got her daughter, Dazzle. She's 10. We've got Benny. She's about 4. Isla, Isabel, Irene and Bernard.
Oh, and while you're talking, someone's come up to say hello. They've been snudging you with their nose.
Yeah, this is Bernard, our male goat. He's a wether, castrated male, and he's my son's pet. And he's gorgeous, and he's very soft, and he keeps sort of order amongst the ladies.
They all seem really beautifully friendly.
Yeah, they are. They're actually quite a docile breed of goat. They make a good sort of home goat. I decided to get a goat, and we were told by the chairman of the Isle of Wight Goat Club that the best breed for us would be a Golden Guernsey, because it's a nice, small, docile goat for young children to be around and learn to milk. I've always loved goats. I don't know why. I come from Birmingham and there weren't many goats. Yeah, I just always wanted to milk an animal before I died. They're really calming. They have a really calming effect on me because I'm, you know, quite batty. They look at me and it's just like, don't worry about anything. We're just going to chew our cud and take our time, and it calms me down.
They are just so incredibly friendly. They just keep coming over and having a good sniff and a good look.
Never afraid of visitors because they're just so chilled out and they've got no reason to be afraid.
And I love the way they've got the different colour collars with different patterns.
Yeah. All the girls have got pink collars and red. And
they look very glamorous.
Yeah, they all have to look nice.
And we've got some goats in the other paddock who are they locking horns? Is that what you call it?
Yeah, they're just rutting really. They're all males, castrated males in there, so they just like to play and
have a play.
Yeah, they all do that. All the females, they do it as well. Although the British Guernseys and the Golden Guernseys, we have all their horns removed. Because of their udders, and it's a sort of safety thing. But obviously those goats over there, they're for meat and they've got their horns.
How do you reconcile and how do you deal with the abattoir process when the time comes? You know, what do you feel about that whole thing?
Yeah, I mean, I just feel fine about it, really. I mean, when we first sent our pigs off, the first batch, I didn't know how I'd feel about it. And I decided that if I couldn't deal with it, then I just wouldn't eat meat ever again. That would be it. I do enjoy eating meat. We eat fish and we eat meat, and I like cooking. When we're on holiday, we eat goat, you know, and I just thought, well, I'm either going to eat meat and I'm going to be okay with this or I'm not, and that's it. And I was fine with it, actually.
Yeah.
But having said that, the thought of sending off a dairy goat, you know, I couldn't comprehend. I love my dairy goats, you know, because I milk them, I sit with them every day, I talk to them, you know, and I've got a different relationship with them. You know, they're loved and they'll stay here until they die of old age. But obviously the other goats, you know, we can't just keep every single goat that's been bred.
We've gone into the paddock and they've decided to have a chew on some of David's clothes. They're having a smell of my jeans and probably a nibble in a minute. How many kids have you got in this paddock? Sorry, I'm just really excited. They're absolutely gorgeous.
We've got 7 who've arrived in the last 2 or 3 weeks. These are boa goats and these are meat goats. The mothers here are for producing kids. The kids were the male ones destined for the abattoir and for meat, for the table. The females, they will be probably part of our future stock. We'll keep them, or they could be sold. In actual fact, so could the males. Anybody wants to give us above the market price for the males, and they can take them away. They're beautiful goats and they make nice pets. As you can see, some people say they look a bit like spaniels with their long brown ears.
They do, and they're currently billy goating all over the furniture, basically. They're just leaping about.
Little kids, they just play all day long, and then they just sleep and they have a drink, and then they play again all day long. Bounce, bounce, bounce. They've only just found their bounce, actually, because the triplets there, they're a week and a half old. And then these twins, they're a week today, is it? Yeah. And the triplets only found their bounce the other day. They were so tiny. We had to feed the little one with a tube into his stomach because he was so weak. He was almost dead when he was born.
And is he okay now?
Yeah, he's fine. Yeah, we slept with him, didn't we? And had him in a basket next to the bed. And in the morning, we decided to bring him out and see if his mum, you know, the longer I left it, she may have rejected him. So we brought him out when he sort of perked up. Well, we thought he was just going to die. So we brought him in the house, fed him colostrum straight into his stomach. And then we did it again a few hours later, didn't we? And then he just lay there, didn't make a sound. And then about early hours in the morning, he started, you know, looking to get out, and we knew he was all right. So we put him with his mum, and it took till that evening to actually get him to suckle off the mum.
So we've entered another paddock, and this is the homestead of Hercules. Yes. And I've heard great things about Hercules. Tell us, Simone, what's so good about Hercules?
Well, this is our mighty Hercules, and he's just the cutest little boy. And he absolutely adores fuss. So if you pick him up and hold him, he'll just fall asleep in your arms.
How big is Hercules, the mighty Hercules?
He's not quite a foot tall.
So what kind of breed is he?
He's a pygmy goat.
He's absolutely exceptional looking, isn't he?
He is, he's wonderful, and he's just such a dear little thing.
If you'd like to check out some pictures of the mighty Hercules, the beautiful golden goats, the polytunnel, succulents, nursery and all other aspects of the Kingston Smallholding tour, please go and have a look at our Facebook on Vectis Radio. Join us after the break as the tour continues. You're listening to Vectis Radio 104.6 FM and online. In our final section of the Kingston Smallholding tour, we explore the polytunnels, nursery, and we chat about hopes for the future.
As well as sort of looking after animals, Simone's a keen gardener, and I'm fairly interested in gardening as well. And we decided right in the early days to erect a polytunnel so we could look after lots of plants, particularly in this sort of windy patch. So we stuck up the polytunnel. As you heard earlier, we've planted lots of trees. I've also planted a small hedge, which is starting to develop. And in between the hedge and the polytunnel, we decided to create a nursery area. And we've created some raised beds using telegraph poles and other bits of wood we've recycled, laid some brick paths, and hey presto, here we are with lots and lots of plants in various states of production.
Take us through what you're growing.
Right, well, I grow lots of annuals mainly, and also succulents. So we've got lots of sort of unusual stuff in the polytunnel that really wouldn't survive a winter in England. We don't heat the polytunnel. So in the winter, everything's covered in fleece. It's all bought in and it's all literally wrapped up and put to bed for the winter. But in January, I start growing seeds. Putting my seeds in. And I grow lots of cosmos, and I've got like 10 varieties of cosmos I grow. Just loads and loads of different things. I like to keep in touch with what the trends are. And I, you know, try and grow them, and then I now sell them at the side of the road.
We're now standing inside the polytunnel, and the difference in temperature, you know, outside is quite misty and grey and rather chilly, and in here it's subtropical, really, really lovely. So Simone, take us through what you've got growing.
Right, so in here we've got quite a range of sort of cactus, oeniums, succulents of all kinds, aloe, agave. That's a cucumber plant there. They've got chilies, tomatoes, and I have like mother plants in here. So I do lots of cuttings. You can see all my mothers, and they're flowering quite often. A lot of these flowers, you don't see flower. Obviously, if you've got them out in the garden, they're not going to flower. But obviously in here, it gets so hot in the daytime. So obviously, you know, things are flowering now.
Do you grow veg?
Yeah, I do grow some veg. I've got a herb sort of garden, but my dad lives next door and he grows a lot of veg.
So you've got your veg supply already.
He always has a glut of veg. So we're growing things like spinach and herbs and, you know, we've got all that sort of thing. We've got tomatoes, we've got cucumbers, chilies, you know, so I grow things that we'll eat. So actually, we do grow quite a lot of veg. We've got loads of fruit there. We've got gooseberries and fruit bushes and all sorts there. Yeah. So, yeah.
Wonderful. And so, as you said, you love to cook from fresh. The animals that you rear as well, they obviously end up on your plates.
Yeah.
And that must be a really satisfying feeling that you've brought them up. Yeah. You've cared for them, you've nurtured them, and now you're eating fresh.
Yeah, it is. It's really wonderful, isn't it? I mean, the pig, you know, the pork has just been unbelievable. It's really delicious. You know, I've never tasted pork like it.
This is absolutely phenomenal, isn't it? So you've got the animal, rearing the animal, sending the animal to the abattoir, and then, but you're using every aspect of that animal. So it's not been a life wasted. It's not been a life chucked into a barn in the dark. It's not been factory farmed. What else have you got coming up in the diary then?
Right, so the next thing coming up in a few weeks is the shearing of the sheep. So that will happen. They'll just turn up, do all the shearing, and then we'll be left with all this wool. So there's normally about 25 kilogram of wool off the 6 sheep out there. 3 are Jacobs, so that's a really nice long staple on the wool, a mixed colour. And then the Suffolk Cross, that's a much shorter staple, but a beautiful, bouncy, lovely, fluffy wool. What I'll do is I'll process all the wool, so it'll all be washed. What we do is we dag it, so we get all the poo off it. And last year we had a dagging party here. So 2 days I had a lot of local ladies come, and everybody wanted to learn how to do it. I did a meal for them all at lunchtime. They all arrived and we spent 2 days just sorting wool. And as it was sorted, I was washing it and drying it on big racks outside. And it was wonderful. And then I went on a natural plant dyeing course that was at Yafford. Run by Sue Stark, and it was an absolutely fantastic thing, you know, just trying to, you know, use it because I've got so many plants, you see, and so to be able to, you know, make natural dyes and actually dye the wool, you know, it's just wonderful.
So important, because in the commercial world, of course, the animals aren't treated as well, and lots of the byproducts are just tossed away because they know it's no longer financially viable to do anything with them, and it's such a waste.
What's your favourite thing on the small holding?
Yeah, it's got to a point now where we can actually sit and enjoy, can just relax a little bit. And actually, I was looking out the other week and I thought, if heaven was like this, this is perfect. I actually couldn't wish for anything more than what we've created together.
Every morning, every single morning, no matter what the weather is, I go outside because I do the early morning round of feed the chickens, feed the sheep, feed the rabbit, feed the pigs, check the goats and give them some hay. I don't do the milking yet. And I don't give them other bits and pieces and look after their medical needs, but I go out there and sometimes it's with a little bit of trepidation because you don't know what you're going to find, particularly when it's sort of kidding time or if you've got a poorly animal, but normally it's just lovely. It just wake up and you, and it doesn't matter what troubles you've got, it kind of blows them away, and I can't wait to get back into the house. And because I'm an ex-Navy man, I always give Simona an early morning debrief. It's been so rewarding, so very rewarding, and you're really in touch with nature. And some of the decisions are hard, and you learn a lot by your mistakes. We've made a lot of mistakes, particularly in the early days with pigs, escaping pigs, and my brother having to rugby tackle a pig, and all sorts of things, and getting over complacent with fencing and thinking it was okay, and there's pigs running around the other side of the field where they shouldn't be. Yeah, and we just learn and learn and learn, and we put those lessons into practice, and it's starting to click, and it's starting to purr, and we hope to make more of it and develop it in the years to come, and continue to enjoy it. And to let other people enjoy it as well. And we encourage visitors to come along and share the experience.
If you'd like to go and meet the billy goats, the kids, the mighty Hercules, and all other aspects of the Kingston small holding, they're holding the Kingston Garden Safari. It's Sunday the 8th of July, and it's in Kingston, just near Shoreall, from 2 to 5pm. This garden safari is supporting the Isle of Wight Motor Neurone Disease Association and Brighstone Scouts. Kingston Rectory Garden will be open. There'll be goats, sheep, pigs and plants. There'll be a tea tent, live music, the Arboretum, free parking and free entrance. There'll be some 50s, 60s and 70s vintage lawnmowers on display. For more details, please speak to Helen Keats on 01983 551 261, and dogs on leads are welcome. You've been listening to Out and About on the Wight with Visit Isle of Wight with me, Laura. Tune in next Wednesday for the afternoon show. Your community, your voice.